All right, so welcome to the pre-show, everybody.
Hey.
Are we recording? I think we're recording, yeah. Well, it's not blinking or nothing.
Is it giving you a time code?
It's not showing the time, but there's a bunch of boxes across the top that are progressing in an incrementing manner.
Maybe.
I paused it, and now it's running again. So, yeah, it's definitely recording. I have it set to the line in, so that should be a... I couldn't find, like, where you actually pick bitrate or anything like that. There's scenes, and there's lecture, and,
right,
and voice
right,
note.
Yeah.
I have it to line in, so hopefully that's a high-quality one.
Yeah, so that's recording from other equipment. When you select audio in the scene select, the settings suitable for recording from other equipment are already selected.
Okay.
For details on the settings, see page 31, and, okay... Audio in.
Who cares about page 31?
Also for dubbing to record from external equipment, etc. And. Yeah. Alright. Cool. Hey!
High alcohol beer here for the pre-show?
Yes.
Beer, if you can call it beer. It's unfiltered, it's alive, it's raw. It is Red Star Kombucha. Original green. It went plop. Did you see the plop?
No, that's just ice.
I don't think it was ice.
That was ice.
I think it was a gelatinous kombucha thing.
No, I think it was ice. Because it was out in the car.
Turn it around. Look at the back here. You got a gelatinous blob in your beer.
Huh.
And kombucha, I believe, is something.
It's ice.
Okay.
It's just ice.
Doesn't feel that cold, but if you say so.
It melted. The blob melted when I touched it.
Okay, all right. It ran away. He scared it.
So what is kombucha?
Man, if we had only done our preparation for the show. Oh, you know what? This is funny. We're recording on the Sony. I didn't start the recording on the on the computer.
Right, well... Why would you need to?
Because it'll be less work later on.
Oh, good point. Good point.
Oh, well. We'll pull that one off the recorder, I guess.
Oh, okay. It's sort of like a
has a bit of Berliner Weiss type smell to it.
Yeah. It's kind of like a weedy lemonade with,
pretty tangy.
Yeah, pretty tangy. Well,
it has a neat sweetness to the end, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't have any of the bitterness you get from any kind of beer, really. This thing, I think we said, is only 1% ABV.
Right. So this is a near beer. And it ain't going to get you drunk. That's for sure.
No, I couldn't imagine drinking enough of this to even catch a buzz. It's good, but it's not a chugger, right? It's complex, it's tangy. What is the glob? Live active cultures in Red Star Kombucha naturally form a small mother culture. You can eat it like we do, or strain it out. So that was...
Okay, it is a glob.
So you do have a blob there.
Yeah, I guess I do. They actually have on the lid, say, what is the blob?
Well, if the beer pours with a blob, you better explain it on the label.
Yeah, whatever. I'll eat it, like they do.
Yeah, so it's a mother like a sourdough, so it was right there.
Mm-hmm.
That's neat. Gives off a neat flavor.
Yeah, I enjoy it. It's, I wouldn't say it's, like, it's better for you than the soda, because it's got cane sugar in it. It's, mm-hmm.
Yeah, the ingredients are water, cane sugar, organic green tea, and kombucha culture.
Hmm. Interesting. Not bad. Better than I was expecting.
Have you tried any of that? Damien gave it to me on one occasion. Got some kvass. Like, it's like a health drink kvass, so it's like lemongrass. It's almost like a V8, but it's, you know, it's... Kvass / V8 instead of, you know, beer / kvass.
Or is it just...
It, there's alcohol. It's like... It's not...
Yeah.
It's not 1% like this. It's sold in the normal grocery store. It's a neat flavor. I had the lemongrass one I liked. Then I had a carrot one, and it wasn't as good. But
carrot kvass. Yeah, I wouldn't be opposed to a carrot beer necessarily. Carrots have a lot of sugar in them.
Yeah, carrot beer. I wonder why we haven't seen one.
I'm sure somebody's thought of it. So the question is...
There's sweet potato beers. Yeah. There's other, sweet roots of
it
things.
It could be just an expensive proposition.
Yeah, I think we need some carrot beer.
They made beet beer, right?
Let me see if I turn this up a little bit. It's weird. Do I sound... It's weird. So my monitor right now is plugged into the Sony recorder we're trying out. To me, you sound fine, and I sound distant and echo, like foggy.
You sound fine to me.
That's weird, because you sound fine to me. I mean, if we both sound a little bit muddy and foggy, I would say it's just me, the monitor on this thing. But it's weird. You sound fine, and I sound weird to me. Let me just gonna plug into the mixer here.
Okay.
So I can have a little bit of... Check. Oh, yeah, I sound so much better. You sound the same, though.
That's so weird. It could be just a not-so-great monitor on that.
It could be that the kids were messing with... No. The equalizer, right?
Yeah.
But no, the equalizer knobs are all where they're supposed to be. More or less. There's nothing crazy on it. It's not like they turned my top end way down. I do run a lower top end than you do.
Yeah, I run a lower top end.
But I also have to lower my bass then. You actually have your bass enhanced. Oh, this is the same. I kind of mimic the same settings we had on the Alesis when I set this one up. So Greg has a little more bass. So, like, say something.
Hello.
Say hello again.
Hello.
So.
Should I say something, like, deeply? Like, well, this is CNN.
So that's Greg with, here. Here's Greg with all zeros.
This is CNN.
Here's me with all zeros. And now let's give Greg his bass back.
This is CNN.
It's hard to hear on the monitor, but there's a little bit of bass that comes back in.
If you say so.
Somehow before we decided that. And then for me, because my voice is so Kermit the Frog and muddy, if I take some of the bass out and take some of the top end out and leave some middle, it seems like it makes me a little bit crisper.
So, okay.
Well, I'm not noticing it today so much, am I? But those were legacy settings, and hey... If it's not broke, don't fix it, right? How's that blob? You get to the blob yet?
Yeah, it was fine. Just a little goopy, that's all.
Any particular flavor? Or is it acidic or tart? Or
tasted like the rest of the beverage.
That's the Red Star Kim Kombucha.
You want to get some alcohol up in this?
Hey, this is made in Pittsburgh.
Yep.
Pig Hill... Hey, I've heard about Pig Hill. Pig Hill Brewery, LLC. This is up in Metro Hill. Pittsburgh, PA, 15212.
So yeah, these beers, I've been cleaning up and possibly for... I may be moving next month. Possibly up to here.
Is your lease up sooner than you would like or something?
I got a thing from my landlord where now he's asking for very draconian things. Like, clothes could never be on the floor at any point in time. And
yeah. Wait, it's my apartment.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm just like, this is draconian and unnecessary. And anyway, I could probably get a better deal and maybe get a place that is not quite as big, but... I don't have to only live in one room for the entire summer, that sort of situation. Right. So I'm probably going to move on to something else.
How long have you been there? You've been there for like long 13 time.
13 years or so.
Wow. That's a long time for renting a place,
Yeah, exactly. Like... And so for him to be kind of all draconian now on me, it's just kind of like, all right, enough.
Mm-hmm. Maybe he wants to, get someone else, kick you out, raise the rent, get someone else in
maybe,
type thing.
Maybe he wants to, or sell it.
Yeah, okay.
I'm fine. I'm ready to move out. Yeah. What else is going on? The Planck satellite.
Planck satellite.
They just released the data from the Planck satellite, which was they shoved it up in the L2 Lagrange and did the most sensitive cosmic microwave background radiation study yet.
Okay.
And the results are interesting. It still needs to go through a little bit more analysis, but essentially everything pretty much fits Lambda CDM. There's
Lambda CDM?
The Lambda cold dark matter model of Big Bang cosmology. So the parameters of Lambda CDM is a parameterization of Big Bang cosmology that very, very, very closely fits with the model very closely fits with the data. So it's the one that predicts a it sees this dark matter and it predicts according to its postulates that it would be a collisionless relativistic field fluctuation of particle, the dark matter.
Okay.
The Planck data gave us a slightly better resolution, showed that dark matter is a little bit more than what we thought. It's instead of being like 24%, it's more like 26%, 27%. Dark energy is a little less, down to like 63%. Regular matter is still around 5%. I don't know if those add up to, but it's something like that. The universe is just slightly a bit older than we thought. It's at 13.8 instead of 13.72.
Well, that's just a few years that's passed since they said it's 13.72. It's aged since then. So.
It's 13.79 something. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, but 13.72 always had like a plus or minus 0.8 on it anyway. So
right. I mean, it's like 800 million years is the margin of error.
Right.
They just discovered that star, I can't remember the name, right? But it's about 190 light years away or something like that. I don't think there was any kind of millions attached to it. I think it's just 190 light years away. But the star itself is like, it's been around for 14 billion years. Like, it only has like helium and hydrogen in it. For some reason, it's burning super slow. And it's like one of the first stars and it's still going type thing. Mm. They didn't really go into the details why. They just talked about how they were more able to more accurately tell the
that had to be small then, wouldn't it?
I'm not sure. They didn't talk about the size. They just talked about how they were more accurately able to determine its distance, calculate its brightness, and, you know, determine that
it was 190 light years away than it would be in our galaxy.
I think it was there was a 190. I don't know if there's any zeros after that, multiples of zeros, right?
I mean, it would have to be relatively short distance away, because otherwise you wouldn't be looking at a star, you're looking at a galaxy.
Yeah, so, it wasn't far. I mean, it sounded relatively close. I think it was 190 light years away, and the thing itself is 14 billion years old, which is weird. And like, how's it older than the universe? Well, the universe's margin of error is 800 million years, right. So it's well within the statistical deviation or whatever they said.
Yeah, so I mean, it's just that the aging system is a little wonky on that. But
so our second beer, Kyuchi Brewery, which is the brewers of Hitachino Nest. This is their commemorative ale. This is a festive ale brewed with vanilla, beans, and spices.
I think we've had this before.
Really? I don't recollect. I would say we have not had this one, be my guess. But who knows? They do give the spices here if you want me to read them.
Yes.
Coriander, orange peel, nutmeg, and cinnamon. And vanilla beans, of course, like they said, which wasn't included in the spices. It smells like a barley wine. Doesn't smell too spicy. But the flavor does get pretty spicy. Like lots of... Lots of what? The nutmeg, maybe? But then it kind of evolves a little bit, and some of the cinnamon and vanilla come through. It's not too brash. It's not too sweet and Christmassy. It's a pretty good blend of spices.
Yes. It's nice. It's running at 8%, so it's a pretty high alcohol beer. Mm-hmm. You can taste it.
It has a barley wine character to it, but then it has all that big festive spicing behind it. Imported by Bee United International, Reading, Connecticut.
I guess, no, we've had their red rice and we've had their white ale, but mm-hmm. we haven't had this particular one. Cool. Let's see. So, we also, you asked the question of why are the WMAP and the new Planck images, why are they elliptical?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I sent you the thing about what it is.
The projection. It's the same time, same kind of projection you'll see for globes a lot of the time. And the projection is that way not to accurately represent where things are, but to show everyone's area relative to everyone else, right? Mm-hmm. This is a projection where it's a very fat, I'm going to talk about the Earth, right? Because everyone's most familiar with, they can close their eyes and imagine the Earth. It's the one where it's a very squat and wide oval, and it, normally Greenland is huge, right? But in this projection, Greenland's tiny, right? Not tiny, it's small. It's the size of, Texas, Oklahoma, right. Nebraska type thing, right? And if you compare it to, Africa or something like that, you see that Africa is a lot bigger, significantly bigger than Greenland. So it's to make everyone's area equivalent to each other. So that makes sense for WMAP.
Yeah, so this is a mall weed projection.
The only thing that
MOLWEIDE.
The only thing that's a little hard for my head is that looking at the outside of a sphere versus being inside the sphere and looking out, right? Because the WMAP is you're looking out in a, you're inside the ball, looking out at the outside thing, where when you're looking at the globe, I guess there's really no difference, right? Because it would be, if you were in the center of the Earth and you just, looked at it through a mirror, it would look exactly the same, right?
Right. Or, and you can do the same thing with just like, you can do, here's the example on the Wikipedia page, mm-hmm. and you can do a celestial one, right? You can put all the constellations out there
mm-hmm.
in a similar situation. It's a projection of a sphere, but so you can see all of the sphere in one image without any turning.
Right.
So that's why.
The shapes of the continents get distorted, but the area of the continent is relative to the area of all the other continents. Where if you don't want the shapes to be distorted and you want to keep the area the same, then you get the NORAD type map where there's the slices cut out of the tops and bottoms, and it's kind of like an unrolled globe, and where you have to cut it to make it go flat type thing.
So, but they don't, I mean, like the image that they just released, they don't actually use that image for their data analysis. Mm-hmm. They do, that's sort of a Bayesian composite of four different analyses. There's a lot of really interesting stuff going on in the Planck thing. I actually had to calm down some people on a forum. Because, one person was like, "Well, hey, this Planck data, this proves the Higgs, right?" And I was just like, "No,
everything proves the Higgs."
No, the Higgs doesn't. Higgs has nothing to do with dark matter or dark energy. We don't know anything. I mean, like I said, Lambda CDM. Cold dark matter. All we know about it is that it really fits the model well. It should be non-relativistic, non-baryonic, and collisionless. This new particle, non-baryonic means not made of quarks. It's non-relativistic means it's cold, means it's it's not moving extremely fast. Collisionless means that it doesn't actually interact with itself. It has no charge, so it doesn't interact with the electromagnetic force. It doesn't interact with itself. If it does, it has an extremely, extremely small cross-section. It possibly interacts with the weak force. We don't know. There's not much you can even say about it, so it's kind of a messy business. So whether it couples to Higgs field, we have absolutely no idea.
Okay.
And then somebody said, wait a minute. Somebody said, they just found the Higgs particle. That doesn't mean they found the Higgs field.
You know what particles are, right?
No. Clearly he didn't.
You should have just sent him the wiki. Here, let me Google that for you. Particle.
I just told him the particle. The field is the particle. The particle is the field.
Google Reader. Right, we talked last time about how Google Reader was going away. Did you happen to catch the parody video? I forget which movie it was from, but it's, you know, Hitler in his bunker and he's...
Oh, Downfall is the movie.
Downfall.
Pretty good movie.
And I'm sure it's a meme where they've dubbed in lots of different things to it. Greg's rolling his eyes. He's like...
Anything you can think
of. How can you not know that they've dubbed... meme's dubbed so much stuff in. Well, you know,
any controversy, particularly an internet controversy of any sort, there's been Downfall movies made about it.
So they took the Downfall scene where Hitler's going off, yelling at everyone.
Tim Tebow. Yeah.
The first 100 times, it's funny.
Yeah.
The Google Reader one was pretty good because, I mean, it was smart. It was very smart how it was written, right? Talking about, you know, the things Google decides to kill. He's like, let me tell you, Orchid's still around, you know? And, talking about like the other competitors and not being ready.
Like, I think what's interesting about that clip is and the reason why that meme is so workable is that it's a great scene, and it can be used because it's not in English, so you can twist the words around. And it also presents presents Hitler as not some sort of, you know, evil monster, but as, you know, just he thinks what he's doing is right, but he's frustrated and taking it out on everybody else. And so it's a great scene, and it works so well for any of those, for any situation where somebody is just like super frustrated with what's going on with the world.
Right. Yeah, no, if you haven't seen any of these memes, go look them up. And I'm sure there's funnier ones, better ones than the Google Reader one, but I enjoyed the Google Reader one. Speaking of Google Reader, I've been using Feedly. We talked about them last week. I've been using them on my laptop and on my phone. They still use Google Reader as the back end, but they're working on their own back end. But it's a nice display. I have to say I like it. The keyboard shortcuts, you know, like all the hotkeys, are mapped up with Google Reader, right? So you don't have to learn new hotkeys. You know, they've copied the keyboard set, you know, so that's nice. I've actually used it to, you know, I'm reading a lot more, like perusing more feeds and whatnot. And I mean, I actually, you know, have beer news and stuff queued up.
Whoa.
Yeah. So maybe it's probably just a new, because it's fresh, I'm on board and gung-ho with Feedly. But in general, I'm digging Feedly. We'll see if it lasts, you know, if I'm as enthusiastic several years from now. But right now, I am.
There was an article or something recently about beer, there's some stuff about how beer is starting to reach a larger threshold now. Mm-hmm. So... It's funny because I think they were quoting how 10 years ago or so, or was it you who sent me that? It said, you know, when we started, Jim Cook said, like, he'd like to see craft beer get 1% or 2% of the market, and that would be probably its limit.
Yeah, that wasn't my quote. My quote was, the volume of craft beer sold since we started podcasting has doubled.
Yes. Yeah, no,
that's the only
that,
one I
that
said.
Was... And that was a correlation does not equal causation type situation, but
fuck you, causation. We did our job. You're welcome. You're welcome, craft beer drinkers of Earth.
And craft beer industry. We should get more perks. No, but it's that, you know, the beer makers themselves never thought that they'd get this kind of...
Some of them, yeah. Growth. I mean, you know, we always talk about growing the pie, right? But the pie is growing faster and faster every year, you know.
Yeah.
We'll talk about some of the numbers in the main show. But, I mean, the percentage of growth is, like if you were guessing, you know, like last year was... 10-11%, you're like, okay, it's gonna be 11-12%. No, it's 15%, you know. It's like boom, you know. And that's just over last year. And if you look at the barrelage sold, yeah, year over year, or yeah, over the last 8 years, it's doubled in 8 years.
So. Well, I mean, that's great. The one thing you have to watch for is bubbles, right? Because you like growth, mm-hmm, but growth has to stop at some point. There's a lot of room to grow, but
right. I mean, they're not growing. It's not like they're growing the economy, right? It's not like they're growing into nothing, which is going to push back, right? They're growing into other markets that you could argue are underserved, right?
Right, right.
So.
And that's where you get your growth. So, yeah. So right now, it's great. I got these at Whole Foods. Had a really nice beer section there. Mm-hmm. It was small, but nice, mm-hmm, actually. There's a lot, you know, a decent selection there. I'm liking the way that, you know, beer is no longer poo-pooed.
So my dad had his retirement party tonight, uh-huh, and that's where we were earlier. And the owner of his happy hour bar, it's called Dave's Bar. It's down on Big Swickley Creek Road. And the thing is seriously a cement block building with tiny little safety block windows with beer signs in them, which you can't even read the beer signs because they're safety block, right? I mean, it is the dive of dives, and I've actually never been there. And I was talking with him today. I'm like, you know, I'm like, you're the Dave, you know, that my dad and my best friend's dad has been going to for years. And I'm like, unfortunately, you don't have anything that I'll drink. He's like, what do you drink? I'm like, I drink craft beer. He didn't recognize the term, right? And I actually, in my hand, I had brought a six-pack to the party. So I pulled out, you know, the Cujo Imperial Stout, Flying Dog. He's like, is that like Dale's Pale Ale? I'm like, yeah. He's like, yeah, we get Dale's Pale Ale there. So now I'm going to have to go down to the dive of dive bars with my dad and drink some Dale's Pale Ale. So, I mean, it is literally everywhere. If it's a Dave's bar, it is literally everywhere. And I know I used literally wrong there, but I meant to make a point.
There's, okay. I mean, the common word when we started was beer snob, right? Mm-hmm. And I never liked that because it wasn't us trying to be snobby with our beer. It wasn't us trying to be pretentious with it. It was just us trying to enjoy it and express that joy and do a little bit of rating along the way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it was just us trying to express how much we loved it. Not how much better we were than other people for drinking it. I think that
just better than other people describing it. Screw tops. Woo!
I think that, but the connotation of beer snob has kind of gone away. Now you're a beer connoisseur, just as, you know, the connotation of...
I don't know if it's gone away. Actually, I probably have seen a little bit more of a resurgence over the last year or so.
Really?
Maybe not to the degree that you were talking about 8 years ago. I've seen a little bit beer snob / beer geek being more... Well,
beer geek is different than beer snob.
No, I've seen it more of a pejorative than, you know, a badge of honor. I mean, not more than... I've seen more pejorative use recently than I have in a while.
Really?
Of both those, yeah.
Where?
I didn't take notes. I don't have the article cited in the article, you know, or anything, but...
I mean, there's always going to be somebody who's going to be like, who's going to try to go against the grain at some point and say, oh, these guys with, you know, who like their pale ales, when I can just drink a Pabst Blue Ribbon and be happy with that. There's always going to be those people. And fine, I mean, you know.
Oh, you know, I know where one of them was. I just remember I was checking out our new competition. You know, since like we realized, like, just, you know, a couple weeks ago that, you know, we're the oldest, longest running beer podcast on the internet. And so I'm like, you know, what else is out there? What, you know, I used
there are podcasts that aren't on the internet.
I used to keep up with, you know, the ecosystem, right? And what was out there? And I kind of let that slip. So I went out and, you know, downloaded an episode from a bunch of different guys. And there's one, I forget their names, but, you know, they were really, you know, we're not beer geeks, you know, we're not, you know, they're talking about how, you know, it's the same kind of thing that other podcasts have said in the past, right? Where, you know, we just drink beer to enjoy it. We don't analyze it to the nth degree. And then what's their show? They're talking about trying to pull out what they're tasting, you know? They're doing exactly what they said they don't do. But I guess they have more fun than we do doing it. You know, I don't know. It's just, it's the same kind of thing that I've heard other podcasts say, like, you know, we don't, you know, we're not beer geeks. We're not. And then, you know, we just drink the beer because it's good. And then they're, you know, doing the, not as thoroughly, but they're doing the same kind of thing. Like, oh, there's a little bit of toffee in there or something. Like, as soon as you say toffee, you're a hypocrite, you know?
Yeah.
So
you're not saying this is good, this is bad. You're describing the beer. You're doing it. Yeah. I mean, we didn't pioneer this concept.
Right.
But we did perfect it.
Yes. Let's get all big on ourselves. Even if we're joking, let's do it anyway.
I am very happy with our show, and don't have any desire to, you know, to see it become an empire. Happy with the wonderful listeners that we have, and with the way our show has evolved. I think that, you know, it started out a very different show than what it's turned into.
And I think it's going to evolve again, especially as who knows exactly how you know, I'm probably just in a lull where, like, my kids are taking up all my time to taking up just most of my time. And then I think when they start doing activities and sports and stuff, they'll probably start taking up all my time again. But, you know, it looks like I'm able to start putting more effort back into the podcast. It won't be what the show was previously. I have no desire to spend, you know, 6 hours editing a show to put it up. You know, those days, that ship has sailed.
Yes.
The tightly edited craft beer radio is gone forever.
And but at the same time, podcasting itself has evolved as a form. Mm-hmm. And tightly edited is really something that doesn't exist anymore. I mean, in few spots, but in terms of the kind of show that we're doing, a tightly edited show would be an anachronism.
Yeah, and we're significantly better at doing a live to tape show than we used to be before we had all the practice. One other thing I wanted to bring up about the show, what was it? I forget. I do have one other topic I'd like to talk about before we end the pre-show. Did you see the great internet census of 2012? The researcher who set up a botnet to scan the entire internet?
He did something that was interesting, but almost certainly illegal. Very illegal.
Very illegal. So, yeah, I find this fascinating. I could probably talk about this for a long time. However, I'd probably rather talk about it now than after a bunch of beer. So if you please indulge me.
Even indulge me with my particle physics nonsense.
All right. So a little background for the people who didn't see this. A researcher anonymously published some results where he scanned every computer on the internet and analyzed the services that they're serving and many of which what operating system they are, things like that. And that's cool. It's good information. Some of the high points there are that the internet is a very empty and lonely place. You would think you hear about we're running out of IP addresses. But if you scan, there are huge swaths of nothing on the internet.
Now, there could be situations where this is just not responding.
There could be, but these would be servers not serving anything, right? So, sure, they could be a NAT router with a whole huge multinational corporation behind it, right? And not serve anything. That could certainly be it. But that's one IP, right? For a whole company. They're going to have a bunch of other ones. You know, it's possible they could have a whole bunch that are firewalled off and not responding to anything. But, you know, even if you work the percentages, there's still huge amounts of things where there's just nothing out there.
And if it's just if it's just a ping, there's certain. I mean,
the things he found.
Here's what I could imagine. Just before you get to the point, like, let's say it's a military thing, right? And they will only respond to pings that are actually formed in a particular way.
Well, most places who care about being stealthy, they don't respond to ping, right? They turn off ICMP.
Right.
But you know, you could have a web server that doesn't respond to ping, but if you try to connect to it on port 80 or port 443. It's going to connect up, right? And you're going to know, hey, it's a web server.
Right.
And you may get a web page. You may get an authentication box, but you'll know it's a web server.
But there could be some sort of, forgive me for being slightly.
It could be firewalled, so it only allows certain people in.
Right.
Yes, and so this person would just get dropped. It could be
like
that.
It expects a certain packet of port information.
Port knocking, where you send something and then it talks to you, right?
Yeah.
And you have to send a certain. It's not just making a standard connection. You're sending a predetermined passphrase, you know, knock. And it says, oh, that's Greg. Hey, Greg, here you are. Here, let me serve you something, right? But that's going to still be a very small amount of stuff on the internet. Other interesting things he found is if you have a device. Say your Blu-ray player with a network port, right? And you say something like, no one will ever hook this up to the internet. You know, on the internet. Not on your home network, but on the internet. At least 1,000 people have. If you have a device where you say, probably no one, or no, only a few people will hook this up to the internet. Hundreds of thousands of people have. So what this guy did is he built a botnet. And a botnet is when you compromise someone else's computer to do work for you.
Right.
A lot of bad guys do this through Trojans, where they trick you into installing something which installs the bot slave software, which phones home and gets command and control instructions from the master server.
Or sometimes you go to his website and they may have a Java applet that's running in the background.
What's that called? A water cooler attack, right? What they'll do is they'll compromise a pop. That's what happened to the recent Apple Java exploit.
Right.
A bunch of Apple developers go to this app developer forum, right? That's not run by Apple. You know, and Apple employees and non-Apple employees alike both go there. Well, the bad guys hacked the forum, put the bad stuff on a forum post or forum posts or ads or wherever they put it. So anyone who went to the forum who was susceptible with Java gotten hacked, and that's how Apple got hacked, because obviously a lot of app developers work at Apple. So that's another way to get this thing. What this guy did was a lot more simple. He just started scanning and said, let's see who's listening on the Telnet port 23. Telnet's an unencrypted terminal thing where anyone who thinks about security even once in their lifetime stopped using Telnet around 1998 and started using SSH, Secure Shell. Greg did at Nauticom, I believe. You probably started using SSH then.
I mean, but the interesting cool thing about Telnet is you can, I mean, the Telnet protocol itself, you can, it is the basis behind web stuff, right? I mean, you tell them to port 80 and you give it.
Yeah, Telnet's just unencrypted transmission, but Telnet gives you a shell, a control prompt over unencrypted, and that's kind of where the problem is. So he scanned port 80. He's like, anything that comes back with a login prompt, let's try admin and admin as the username and password. Let's try root and root. Let's try admin and nothing and root and nothing. He got in to 1.2 million devices.
Yep.
Out of those 1.2 million devices with those obscene passwords, 420,000 of them had the right shell, had enough horsepower for him to run his Nmap software on. So he wrote a virus, a worm, that would find these hosts and install a scanning software on it to scan the whole internet.
Interesting side note, he knew that there was also vulnerabilities, and he actually wrote a little bit of his code to worm out
Well, he, yeah, there's a couple of things there. Yeah. He wrote his code to be super polite, run at the lowest or highest priority, highest number, lowest priority. So it would kind of wait anytime the CPU was busy doing anything else.
Right.
After I talk into this, I really respect Steve Gibson from the Security Now podcast. Learned so much from him over the years. He went to press too soon, and he was very reactive and hyperbolic on his podcast about this. And I have so many issues with this, and we'll get into that in a minute. He wrote super polite. If the box got rebooted, he came off of it, you know, when he was done, he cleaned himself up and left. He noticed that he was competing with some other worm, right? And this is what I think what you're talking about, where if he saw this other worm, he would kill it, right? And get rid of it. So Steve Gibson, he was very reactionary about this thing. He's like, this guy published this thing, completely irresponsible. He opened Pandora's box, and now everyone knows this is possible. I'll argue that trying to telnet to port 23 on a whole subnet is, I believe that I tried that earlier in life.
Anybody who knows anything about this stuff knows that this is possible.
So, you just wouldn't expect the numbers to be there, right?
Yeah.
So the only thing he proved is there is millions of computers that anyone can log into willy-nilly.
Right.
What he missed was the whole report characterization. He was talking about how he's logging into HP printers because the report showed how many HP printers are not firewalled on the internet. But that was part of the whole internet scan, not of his botnet creation part, right? So he completely mixed up the botnet creation and the results of his research. And he didn't even talk about how he was already competing with another worm that was doing the same thing. You know, I'm shocked that Steve Gibson put on Security Now podcast put out such misinformation. I mean, this was why we started Craft Beer Radio, because beer podcasts were doing this. I guess I need to start a security podcast. I mean, it was a one episode lapse, I'm sure, but I wish I could, you know, email the guy. You know,
why, like, don't you?
Well, I could, but I'm not going to get a reply back. He just gets too much stuff. I've emailed him a few times, and you know, and those ones I didn't expect a reply back. He says he reads everything he gets. Also, it would take several hours to write my response to him. I just don't have the time for that. I just can't get my point across without sounding like a pissed off kid, you know. So I don't know, but so the dude scanned with his botnet, scanning billions of IPs an hour. Like, basically, you know, he's like, why did I do this? I'm like, because I thought of it. And if I didn't take the opportunity to do this, it was one of those things, like, I spend my life wondering if I could have, you know, he was operating on an internet scale and with, you know, pretty simple, you know,
we should make the point that we're assuming it's a dude. It's anonymous.
It is anonymous. It could be a chick. Because there's hacker chicks. I don't want to be sexist or anything. But it's probably a dude, if you just take the odds.
Odds are it was a dude, but I, you know, just...
The odds are it was an American dude, just by the way he wrote his report.
Right.
You know, you can definitely narrow it down. It wasn't someone who didn't speak English natively, and he probably was not someone who speaks UK English, New Zealand English, right, Australian English, you know, things like that. But yeah, I mean, you can download all his data.
Didn't he find like there were areas of the internet that people thought were like going to be empty that were like full of activity? And
I don't remember that specifically. I remember the opposite, where, like, you know, there's things like, you know, whole class A is given to a company and like nothing was there, you know, things like that. I think the things he found was, you know, the obscene number of HP printers that are plugged directly into the internet, which anyone who wanted to could print pages to. So, like, that paper sitting on top of the printer there, if my printer was hooked up to the internet, that could be from some guy out on the internet, you know?
Well, I mean, when you... I think the fact of the matter is that when you give internet to the population willy-nilly, you're going to get a situation where lots of people are going to just hook things up in a completely insecure way.
Yeah.
I mean, if you don't use a router, and instead you use, like, a... a hub, then yeah, you're going to get a lot of stuff that's...
It still takes a little effort because you're not going to have multiple IPs from your ISP, you know, things like that. But, you know, I thought about this. I'm not sure if we've talked about it, but yeah, the proliferation of the internet. It's like when this would be a fun thing to figure out, like a good analogy, like when in history has the general population been given such a powerful, dangerous, I mean, like at risk of information theft, you know, identity theft, things like that, right? Because,
well, I mean, you could say the electric grid. It's a slightly different story because information theft is not quite as easy, but it's dangerous in one sense. I mean, if you're
yourself, but people are getting on, and you know, it's such a value in Facebook and this and that, but no one is thinking, you know, like how many people you know.
The telephone grid is an example, I suppose you could say.
So so here's a great example. Someone at work, new employee, replaced an old employee. They got an email that looked like it was from AT&T for a $1,700 bill. You know, we just, you know, thank you for paying your $1,700 bill. Click here if you have any questions. And that was a phishing site, right? To get you to enter your AT&T credentials into it. And, you know, I struggle. And this was two new people. One of them's pretty internet savvy. And, you know, I need everyone's spidey sense to go off when something weird happens, right? And these two people are forwarding stuff to accounting and about, do we need to pay this bill and stuff. I'm like, where's your fucking spidey sense? Why doesn't a $1,700 bill to someone's email account about an AT&T mobile charge sound a little fishy?
You know, if people don't have experience, it's that thing where... If you don't have experience getting something wrong, then you're not going to understand what's wrong about it. And
maybe, you know, I mean, con men are old. It's just a whole new reach of con men and perhaps sophistication of con men, too.
Well, yeah, it's just adaptation. And it also, so there's two things I think that go in there. One is that, like I said, I mean, you have people who are not experienced dealing with that, then they're not going to know. And you can try to train them all they want, but it's also a situation where you can train somebody to do you can train somebody in school, get them all the schooling they want, but they still have to fail in order to understand where they're going wrong. And the other thing is that the best of us have bad days.
Right. Yeah, so as you're using your computer, something fishy happens. Figure out that it's fishy. Like, you know, hey, look, it has the AT&T logo. They want me to log in, but it's att-mail.com. That's probably not where AT&T's email AT&T comes from. You know, it's probably not their domain. Be skeptical of everything that happens to you on the internet. Everything. Because people are trying to steal your shit.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's true. It's true. People, I mean, my inbox fills up with junk of all sorts. Go here for your Blizzard free trial. Go here for your whatever. I don't see Nigerian print so much. That scam's kind of, you know, fallen out by the wayside.
Until they change it to Algeria or something like
that. Well, no, I mean, the whole money laundering scheme has turned into people now buy services all the time. So let's make it look like we're those services. We can log in and pool that way.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a more sophisticated line of attack. I'm surprised I don't see much Netflix stuff. I would expect more stuff coming around my way that says, oh, hey, Netflix guy, come into your free movie or whatever.
Yeah, look at AT&T, right? If they get your AT&T credentials, they could buy some phones, have them shipped somewhere, have a mule pick them up, ship them, then, you know, out. So I think that's probably why AT&T is such a thing. They want to buy some phones, steal some phones. With Netflix, you know, what are you going to do with the person's Netflix account? You know, there's not really things you can buy with it, you know. So it's probably, yeah. there may be a value to hacking someone's Netflix, right?
Well, I don't see much Amazon stuff either. Do you see?
No. I haven't really looked at my spam folder all that much, so I'm not sure what's in it.
Well, Amazon would seem perfect, right? Because then you can spend money on anything.
Yeah. But activated cell phones are kind of nice. So I could definitely see the value to stealing someone's AT&T login or Verizon login for sure.
But you see Blizzard stuff, and that's just buying games and things.
Yeah.
But
was the thing? They just... Xbox Live, right? They hacked a bunch of Xbox employees, Xbox Live accounts or something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay, yeah, so the Great Internet Census of 2012. You can download the 500 gigabyte BitTorrent, which unpacks into a 9 terabyte file. And you can research and examine the whole kit and caboodle of what he downloaded.
That's a lot.
Yeah. They used a certain kind of compression. I never heard of it before. I don't remember the name. It's like XIO or something like that. And to get this thing decompressed, the compressor can run on a cluster. So like you need like several computers like on the network to all work at decompressing this thing. If you try to do it like just on one computer, it'll take forever. Like I don't know how long it'll take. Maybe months.
Wow.
You know?
Well, I don't have 9. I mean, I have 2 terabytes of storage. I don't have 9. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. But?
That's okay. The thing was able to compress from 9 terabytes down to 500 gigabytes because it's a very CPU intensive, right? It works really hard at finding all the stuff that it can, you know, consolidate down. Where, you know, gzip and, you know, bzip and just zip relatively don't use that much CPU. And, you know, gzip, for example, if it's all text, it can generally give you a 10-to-1 savings, right? If it's stuff like MP3, which is already compressed, it's not going to give you that kind of saving.
Right.
But if you run it through this kind of compression, you might see some, but it's going to take, you know, it's going to crank away at a while trying to find similar pieces to map to the same, you know, piece of data and stuff like that. All right, I'm done. I'm ready for some beer.
All right.
All right, I guess I hit stop over here this time.